wanted to bring you the next message in our iFaith series, number 86, which I've entitled Too Little, Too Late. And it's from 2 Chronicles. This is the last message in the current unit. It's the 8th century BC. God's people are not doing very well, and a lot of people know it. Prophets have been addressing it. Even a number of the kings have been trying to effect reform. You see, the priesthood is corrupt. The monarchy is decadent. The people lack a will to do what's right. In the books of Chronicles, we read about at least 9 different kings who try to initiate reform movements. The most extensive are by Hezekiah, and we'll look at him in just a moment, and Josiah. And yet, sadly, it always seems a case of too little, too late. They don't go deep enough. The people collectively don't have the willpower. If you've ever been in a rowboat or a canoe or a kayak, you know you can turn these boats around pretty quickly if you have to. You can take evasive action. You can do a 180. But the larger the ship, the harder it is to do that. For one person to change his or her life, maybe someone's been on the run from God, someone is coming back or making an important decision, this can be accomplished quite quickly. But for large groups, it's a lot harder. It's like turning the aircraft carrier around. Just the momentum behind that massive vessel could easily carry it for kilometers before actually executing the turn. Of course, I've learned this lesson of too little, too late in my life in many ways, and probably you have too. I can think of one of the most painful days in my 11 years of university. It was early on, and I was taking a certain history class I wasn't very motivated to study for. And you know what it's like. You're young. You got lots of other things to do. And so you leave it to the last minute. And unfortunately, that meant after a sleepless night, doing my best. But honestly, I still remember this exam. Half of it, I didn't even understand what the question meant. And the other half, I was able to answer. And I had the boldness to write a little letter to the professor. I said, "Professor, oh, I didn't sleep last night. I've been up all night. It's been really hard. As you see, I did half of the exam. Is there any way you could just double that score? You know, because I was only working at half pace, and you could give me the score as though I did that on each half." And he said, "No." I got a 37. I remember even visiting his office and begging him, "No." As a result of that, I nearly failed that class. I lost my scholarship. I had to go to the scholarship committee and ask how I could get that back. And there was a way. There was a way by taking summer classes, almost like a punishment, although it was important for me because my attitude changed. I knew this. There's some things you cannot cram for. You can't cram for life or for the judgment day. I mean, you have to live a certain way. If you've never driven a car, you can't just take the driving test, 10 minutes after you open the written test and hit the road. You're not going to make it. Anyway, that was one of my worst experiences ever. Too little, too late. And honestly, even if I had been preparing a week or two ahead of time, I'm not sure I would have done very well because I had not been paying attention for that whole term. Do you relate to that? You ever done that? Even when people mean well, that doesn't mean that what they attempt will be accomplished. Let's look at our two characters. We have Hezekiah. This is in 2 Chronicles 29. And it says that he was a good king. He was like his forefather David. In fact, in the first month of the first year of his reign, he opened the doors of the temple of the Lord. And what goes on there, what is happening, the temple doors have been closed. People weren't even bothering to go to church. They weren't even bothering to worship Yahweh. They were very motivated to worship the fertility gods and goddesses, the weather gods like Baal and Asherah and so forth. But, the easy ones, the ones that, you know, promised a good life. You don't really have to be living a holy life. Just go through the motions and you're okay. So the temple of the Lord, the doors have been closed. So they have to firstly open it and then clean it out and then clear it out of all the idolatry and get the people in the right mode. And so that's the first thing Hezekiah does. They just, it's like, okay, we're going back to church. And then there's Passover. And chapter 30 of 2 Chronicles is dominated by that. Hezekiah apparently leads an amazingly exciting Passover celebration. This is one of the three times of the year when all the people come together. And he invites people not only from the south, but also from the north, from all parts of the country. And let me just read three verses from this chapter. They celebrated that the feast for 7 days. There was musical accompaniment. Hezekiah spoke encouragingly. For 7 days, they ate their fellowship offerings. And then the whole assembly agreed to celebrate the festival 7 more days. So for another 7 days, they celebrated joyfully. Can you imagine? I mean, they've come in. It's like a conference for 7 or 8 days, and everyone agrees, let's do 7 more days. Okay, can you even imagine you're at church, and the congregation says, let's extend the service by 7 hours. You think people would stay? How about 7 minutes? But they are so happy. We read a few verses later, there was great joy in Jerusalem, for since the days of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, and this is more than 200 years earlier, there'd been nothing like this in Jerusalem. So this is really amazing stuff. All right, let's go to our second reformer. Now, we're going to fast forward about 80 years or so, and this is Josiah. And Josiah is the king, sadly, just 35 years before it's all over, before the complete destruction of Jerusalem, not just the temple, but the nation. It's all over. So I'm going to read just a few verses here. In his 8th year, when he was still young, he began to seek the God of his father David. Again, this is his forefather David, because in Judah, every king is a son or grandson, etc., of David. In the 8th year of Josiah's reign, that means he was 15, because he became king at age 8. Wow. And they start clearing things out. In the 12th year, they're getting rid of idols and images. We read, in his 18th year, he sends certain people to repair the temple, because the kings after Hezekiah were unmotivated to sustain the reform, just like the kings after Josiah. But they go, and during the process of repairing the temple, they make this discovery. This amazing discovery, the long-lost book of the law, almost certainly the book of Deuteronomy. And let me just read about Hezekiah's reaction, because any kind of reform in our lives or in our churches, in our world, it's got to at least have these elements. Look at Hezekiah. When the king heard the words of the law, he tore his robes, and he gave orders to various people to inquire of the Lord about the remnant in Israel and Judah and what's written in this book that's been found. Great is the Lord's anger that is poured out on us because our fathers have not kept the word of the Lord. They've not acted in accordance with all that's written in the book. So Hezekiah's, Josiah's reaction, Josiah is even more radical. He tears his clothing. He assumes this could be, you know, he prepares for the worst case scenario, but he says we need to inquire of the Lord. And so he sends people to a prophet or a prophetess. Her name is Huldah. She's a great woman. I did a character study of her last year. But he knows where to get the word. So he goes to her. They send word to her. And she says, disaster's on the way. You know, there's no way to avert that. It will be delayed because Josiah is a good guy. It'll be delayed a little bit. But they reaffirm the covenant. And then in chapter 35, the next chapter, we have another grand Passover celebration, like the time of Hezekiah, except even bigger. It's twice as many animals. Very exciting. And these kings, you know, they issue decrees. Everyone is supposed to be on board. They make a lot of changes very quickly. People are very amazed by this. But it doesn't really hold. It doesn't stick. The following kings, that is the kings after Josiah, they make no effort. They have no will to sustain the reform. And as I mentioned, it's only 35 years before the Babylonians will destroy the temple. It really was a case of too little, too late. It's not that Josiah was a bad guy. Overall, very good like Hezekiah. But what they tried to accomplish they needed to start way earlier, and it would have needed to be a conviction, not just of the king and a few of his friends, but it would need to go much deeper. Well, the truth is, Judaism survived, even though eventually they were deported, and most of the Jews lived outside without the temple and the sacrifices, yet Judaism survived. The readers, the initial readers, the original hearers of Second Chronicles, they were in this position. They're in exile, and they know, well, we're still here. Is there hope? And so Chronicles gives a lot of hope. But Judaism survives, and in the first century A.D., those who are still faithful, as you know, they embrace the Messiah. They become part of the Christian movement. That's very encouraging. But it does bring up a question. Will the modern church survive? With all these different currents of worldliness and liberalism and progressivism and just people really not knowing the scriptures, will it survive? I don't know. I actually don't know if you mean the institution. But I think just as there were truly godly men and women among the Jews, even though overall it was a mess, even though overall there was collapse, there was still a number of great people. I think Christianity will survive because where two or three are gathered together, I'm there in their midst. So I don't know about the institution. I don't know about your denomination, but the faith will survive. Well, what does this mean for us? Now, of course, we can change our lives. We can seek the Lord. We can, maybe we've sought him and we're actually are Christians, but we're not living the right life. We need to repent. We need to make a decision. Yes, we can do that. Yes, we can do that, and we should. But making changes at the individual level is very different to the group level. Very often, reformers, and these may be preachers, they could be church leaders, but they come up with programs, they have ideas, they have an agenda. But programs don't change hearts. They can be useful, but they don't change hearts. Yes, you can start an evangelistic campaign. You can begin a concerted prayer and fasting, which you ask everyone to join. But unless people are really rooted in the Word, unless this is their faith, you'll get quick results, probably. And yet the revivals will tend to die out. That's what happens. We'll be in no different position than Israel was after Hezekiah or Josiah. And I think we need to appreciate that. It's harder to turn a group around. People don't become godly overnight or after hearing a single message. It's a process. If you're a church leader, be smart. Be smart spiritually. Don't get faked out. Don't think, well, if we just have we write a good curriculum and have a good plan, then everything's okay. No, that doesn't mean everything's okay. It's much more complicated than that. Well, after these kings, where it was too little too late, after the Babylonians come, the Persians take over. And the situation changes. The next books that we would look at would be Ezra and Nehemiah. But we're going to end today's message here because we're at the end of our unit. Our next unit will look at the prophets of the 8th century B.C. These are people who were, say, contemporary with Hezekiah. We'll look at Hosea and Amos and Micah and especially Isaiah. And then in the final two units of iFaith, we'll look at the historical books near the end of the Old Testament and then the final prophets as well. But that's the end of this unit. Too little, too late. Let's take this to heart, whether we're attempting to move a group or a cluster of groups or just move our family or just ourselves. But there's no shortcut. The Lord is responsive, but we need to have the intelligence and the respect to begin preparations early. Don't leave it to the last minute. Don't be caught out. Don't let it be a case of too little, too late. God bless you. Hope you've enjoyed this, and bye-bye for now.